Hello and welcome. We are celebrating episode 26 of the VCD round table.
Sorry.
Matthias is celebrating. We will have a lot of fun about Matthias tomorrow once we talk a bit more about all the different places where he has pain from celebrating too much. But nevertheless, we are going to get started. Today's episode of the VCD Roundtable is going to cover the topics around NSX Edge clusters, distributed firewalls, license optimization, and all these wonderful things. But we thought we'd get a bit back out of the whole license discussion, which we have been doing too much for, or not too much, but have been doing a lot in the last couple of weeks, into a more technical topic. And Matthias was actually trying to convince his buddy to do all kinds of other things, and he now finally figured out that he is better in technology, and so he's going to lead this topic now. And so I'm going to head over, but Toby, maybe one or two words from your side before we get started, so that Matthias can at least get some breath back.
Not really. Let's see what Matthias is ramping up, and I have prepared some questions.
Nice.
Matthias, go.
Hello and welcome. Right. Oh, I need to click on present. Yeah, I'm good at technology. Congratulations. So let's get the slides on the screen, hopefully. Or maybe Toby does it. Oh, no, there we are. So as Eve mentioned today, we're talking about edge clusters and licensing. I know it's again the topic or the term licensing, but today we're sneaking into the topic from a more technical perspective, as Eve already mentioned. So the idea is, what's the basic configuration? I did not fat finger the acronym, so I really wrote most cases in VCPP, which was the old model, but that's a basic configuration for many service providers, right? You have an edge transport node cluster, two edges, a T0, which is the provider gateway, X or Z amount of T1 edge gateways. And if you just needed more throughput, in most cases, you just scaled up. So you added more virtual CPUs to the edge transport nodes. In the old world, it was perfectly fine because you paid on virtual RAM. But in the new world with Broadcom, it ends up that you need to commit more gateway firewall licenses. Because you scale up, you add CPUs, you add licenses to the edge transport nodes, right? So in the new world, this model might not make sense, might be wrong. It makes only sense if every tenant has a gateway firewall, or most tenants have a gateway firewall. So I think that's more like a small to medium-sized environment. Toby, any idea if we talk about like large edge transport nodes, how many edge gateways with an average throughput can be handled? 50? 60?
At least 50. And assume, and this is something I have in also prepared. As soon as we are talking, and this is now with the new licensing model, also becomes maybe an interesting part. We should now also take in charge that we have the possibility to bring in bare metal edges as well. And to be honest, on a bare metal edge, I would easily say 200, 250, maybe more.
Yeah, that's true. So math needs to be done. What might be more efficient from a licensing, cost licensing perspective? But let's stick with the virtual world. So I think that's the base model. And if most of the tenants have edge gateways, so if you deploy large, you can run 50, 60 edge gateways. It really depends on the throughput each tenant needs. So very, very basic. But what if only a few tenants need gateway firewall? So because with the gateway firewall, we are all aware that you license the cores times 4 times firewall add-on list price times discount if you commit. So if you have only a few tenants needing a gateway firewall, it doesn't make, or it might not make sense to license the basic edge cluster with 2 times 8 virtual CPUs, so that in total would be 128 gateway firewall licenses, if I did the math correctly, maybe. Or it's just 64, but we're good. And the few tenants you have, you place those edge gateways on a separate edge cluster, which is licensed with the gateway firewall. And those edge transport nodes have only 2 virtual CPUs instead of 8. So it's 2 times 2 is 4, times 4, so you license only 16 instead of 64. It's not a huge amount of money, but on the other hand, if most customers refuse having a stateful gateway because of the firewall, because they don't need it, it doesn't make any sense to pay for it, because you can't monetize that many gateway firewall licenses just out of a few tenants. So on the base cluster, you could run the T1 edge gateways stateless, but that's a managed service. So be careful with the stateless T1. Toby, what's the really cool thing about a stateless T1?
Headless.
It's not me talking all the time. Headless, stateless, whatever.
It's headless. No.
It's headless.
What's the cool feature of a stateless T1? I don't need an edge transport node. That's the cool feature about it.
Exactly. So only the distributed router component is deployed or instantiated.
Instantiated, yeah.
But there are a few caveats around that, because it's only a managed service, so it can only be configured by the service provider. And if a tenant manages the networks themselves, they cannot connect the network to the edge gateway because it's a managed service. So that's the really downside of this configuration, because you need to provision the Chenev-based segments in NSX and import those segments to Cloud Director as an OBDC network.
And to be honest, also I lose the functionality of utilizing a distributed firewall, because I also had this discussion already that some service provider said, yeah, but okay, at the end I can also do the whole firewalling, or the tenant could do the whole firewalling also with the distributed firewall only.
Mm-hmm.
Which is basically true, to be honest, but technically there is also a little bit of an issue, because Cloud Director, as you has already mentioned, always provides a tier one gateway stateful, and there is the default firewall rule as well, which is an any block. So I have already my firewall in place.
Yes. Yeah, that's so true what you just have said. But back to the distributed firewall idea you came up with, it could be offered as a managed service again.
Yeah.
But then you start the whole discussion, what if someone fat fingers the firewall rule? Whose fault is it? Who pays for it? Is it unplanned downtime? Yes, no. So that's a very difficult discussion. So that's a possible idea. What else? What if only a few tenants need the gateway firewall, but we need high throughput? So we can increase or scale up the edge transport node cluster hosting the T0. We could run edge gateway stateless over there. We could have more T1 clusters somewhere else running, and I currently see I fat fingered a few boxes. So you can have multiple edge clusters for T1s as well. So that would decrease the size of a single edge transport node if needed.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, we could play the same game with ATP, advanced threat protection. So I think that's one of Toby's most favorite topics, because ATP Advanced Threat Protection offers IDS, IPS, or that in our scenarios, we're currently talking about gateway IDS, IPS. So we could have an edge transport node cluster hosting the provider gateway, set T1s. In the new example, they're all stateful. So the cluster is licensed with gateway firewall. It can be scaled up. So we increase the size of the edge transport nodes. We can also scale out, add additional edge transport nodes. But again, it's only licensed gateway firewall.
Yep. And then you have and the add-on for the ATP stuff, because in the gateway firewall, there is no IDS IPS.
Exactly. So what you could do, because gateway IDS IPS is bound to a T1,
yeah.
You can add a you can add a second edge transport node cluster only hosting edge gateways with ATP license. So you need to commit less cores. If I put matches in a separate cluster with hosts with 8 cores. Oh, okay. Thank you for your question. So we're currently, so the underlying infrastructure is always licensed with VCF. It doesn't matter. So I'm currently not taking VCF or DSXi hosts, hosting those edge transport nodes into the equation. So VCF licenses is all over the place. VCF is licensed on a minimum of 16 cores per socket. Yes, even though a physical CPU has less than 16 cores, still 16 cores VCF are licensed. The same for the add-ons, which are host kind of host-related add-ons, which is the distributed firewall. That's kind of a host-related add-on, and that is also licensed in 16 cores per socket. The gateway firewall is licensed on the number of virtual CPUs the edge transport node has configured times 4. Same for, as Toby mentioned, the bare metal edge. You just count the physical CPUs times 4, and that's the gateway firewall license.
But one add-on on that, Matthias, if you run your edges on a separate cluster, you don't need to take this cluster in the count for the VMware firewall add-on. So you just need to bring in your VCF cores.
Correct.
No additional firewall stuff, because the firewall, the gateway firewall, is always licensed, as you just mentioned, with the edges.
Exactly. So gateway firewall and distributed firewalls are two separate licensing topics. Exactly. But for the gateways now over here, we can also do one dedicated edge transport node cluster for ATP, because ATP licenses are more expensive than the gateway firewall or the firewall license add-on. So it's also a pretty interesting idea. And you can combine those edge clusters and gateways and distribute all over the place. So it doesn't matter. So the only thing, Toby, is what could be interesting with the bare metal edge. The bare metal edge does not consume a VCF license.
The bare metal edge does not consume a VCF license. That's fully yeah. right.
Or at least 32.
It's 32. But yeah. As we are speaking today.
Yeah. So that could be taken into account as well. But if I just rethink or think about the last few weeks, all the calculations I've done with various service providers, being really honest, the gateway firewall in terms of cost and licensing cost is not the big game changer.
No.
It's not adding tens of thousands of US dollars per month.
Absolutely on that. And I would just say, we more and more, we have done a clear clarification what is the gateway firewall, because there is slightly a difference between, let's call it enterprise licensing and service provider licensing. There is a slight difference, as we have figured out. And so for all of our service providers, we need, or you need to take care, yes, there is the gateway firewall, which brings us some interesting features, as you just referred to it, and but also can bring in or save some additional costs.
Yeah, and it's always a trade-off, because if you introduce multiple edge clusters, you need to be fair, because you need to take into account that you need more maintenance. You have more administrative overhead, but on the other hand, all the upgrades and updates are orchestrated using VCF and or NSX Manager. So it's not that big of a deal anymore. All right. Speaking as of today, because we started talking ATP with Cloud Director 10.5.1.1, Gateway IDS IPS is still a managed service. So there is currently no self-service around that. And another interesting technical aspect, if you have multiple edge clusters in your infrastructure and you will deploy edge transport nodes or edge gateways to a very specific edge transport node cluster, make sure to configure Cloud Director correctly to choose the right one by default, or be very careful during the creation of an edge gateway and do not just click, yeah, use the same edge cluster as the T0 uses. Be very careful. Yeah. So what if you fat finger an edge gateway creation and the T1 ends up on an edge cluster where it should not be? You consume a few hours. If you are not changing it immediately, you will consume a few hours over each gateway firewall. Can't change that until you remove it.
Which is still the biggest question, is how all of that is going to be handled, because officially still all documentation says that all add-ons are commit licenses only, where no one actually so far could answer the question, what happens if I'm utilizing more than I actually committed? Does that mean Broadcom automatically turns any overage into commit licenses? That would be an interesting game changer.
It's part interruption, but the product usage guide launched on the 26th of March, 2024, has a dedicated section about allowing firewall overage usage.
The contract, however, still has a password switch there is no overage for add-ons. So the question is, which document wins over which document?
Okay. So in German, we say Obersticht unter, right? but if you play poker, a Smith and Wesson is more than four aces.
But I'm not sure how I would classify the product usage guide now.
So we will figure it out sooner or later. But yeah. Okay. So
I think we shouldn't worry too much about it in the beginning anyway, because I have my doubts that the usage meter can even track it at the moment. So
4.8 can't, but I have never said that.
Silence.
Okay.
So this is not what we are talking about.
So these are a few aspects around gateways, gateway placement from a license term, from license perspective. Another very big deal is DFW, because that adds a complete different price tag to the whole story. So this is a basic example. 20 hosts, two sockets each, host-related or core-related add-on. So we license at least 16 cores per socket. So that's 640 DFW cores.
That's it.
Redid the math. So the list price is still $120. So that's a pretty nice price tag per year. If none of your customers use the DFW, none of the customers would like to pay for it. Or if only a few, very few uses DFW, you cannot monetize that amount of money out of it. I would say the very easiest approach is to split clusters. Just have multiple clusters. So we just have this very simple example. You have 16 hosts in the base cluster. So 2 sockets, 32 cores, blah, blah, blah. And that cluster is licensed with VCF. And the second cluster, in our example, just 4 hosts, now has 2 sockets, 16 cores. It's 128 cores. And the cluster is also licensed for VCF, of course. But in the cluster, all cores are licensed with DFW, 128 cores. So that's a big game changer. So your license of roughly, oh no, we can do it exactly. So your license 512 cores less.
Yes. Yep.
Times $120 per year, this price, that's a huge amount of money you can save.
Yeah.
But and yes, sir.
But to be honest on that, we are still awaiting the final answer on that question, because I have heard some rumors that maybe DRS groups will solve here some stuff. I'm not talking too much about it right now, but let's see what the Eve is now canceling the stream.
Eve ate 3 lines.
Let's see what the future is.
DRS groups for distributed firewall, whoever comes up with that. Yes, but whatever.
Whatever. Let's call it whatever.
Because it would not really limit the DFW in the first place. It would limit where the VMs run, but
yeah, and that's the interesting part, because from a technical perspective, I only need to take care about where my VMs are running.
Ah. So what you're referring to is the overage possibility.
I mean, let's see.
Yeah. So if a host has no active workloads running on, there's no need to license it. So if it's not a VCF license, it's the same for all the add-ons. So yeah.
Yeah.
But then you need to do the math again. What's cheaper from an operations perspective, having a few hours a year or a few days a year overage, or commit the cores? The only thing, what from a technical standpoint of view, what you need to be careful with is how the transport zones are designed. And I'm more precisely talking about the overlay transport zones. Because if you have the great idea of, oh yeah, let's do 2 different overlay transport zones, please reconsider all the implications, like virtual machines can't talk to each other if they run on different clusters. You need separate edge transport node clusters because of different overlay transport zones. So there's, again, a lot of design work which needs to be done if you start splitting your clusters because of licensing. But again, I think with the DFW, you can, or the DFW licensing enables us as service providers to reduce the license payments massively. Because if you license a whole cluster, and that's how you license the DFW, that's what I want to say, you can't just license a few hosts of a cluster. It's the whole cluster. So ESXi host cluster, that's it. You can't just slice and dice it. Say, I license only half. So that's not what Toby meant with the DRS groups. So that's also something which needs to be considered. But again, from a technical standpoint of view, I haven't seen that many service providers using the distributed firewall currently because of tenants breaking their own infrastructure, because any block means any block, and there is no a bit of any, so any is any.
Yeah, but just a little bit of any.
Basic firewall guide says it's like the first rule you should be apply is always the default deny any rule.
Yeah. So if you apply the rule,
it's your infrastructure with a distributed firewall highly protected.
Yeah, but that's what we call micro-segmentation. Highly secure infrastructure. Cool. So that's from a slide perspective. So these are the slides we prepare.
I would say any questions from the audience. We have 26, 27 people watching us live over all the different channels. And
just, I have to say, this is a real background.
And that's a real Reinhardt. That's a real Reinhardt beside behind me.
Any questions, any comments? I think if we in the nearer future, if we just spend a few minutes on analyzing the features our or your customers would like to use. And then you start considering how to size the edge transport nodes and where to place it and how to license it. But it's highly tenant service consumption related. And again, charge for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's
an overall topic wherever we talk about the service provider space at the moment. Is it's very, very important for service providers to know, fully understand all the feature sets, all the functions, all the things you have, and how you can actually solve customer problems with this. And I just had a call this morning with another service provider, and he said, it's like, yeah, but we are utilizing solution ABC for this and solution DEF for that. And I said, it's like, for sure you can continue to do that, but you're now actually paying double for it. So even if your other solution might be more sophisticated for the other customers, maybe the smaller one is actually a good idea to fix some of that. So it's definitely a good point to really go and look deeper into that one.
Ah.
Matthias,
I know what the question is.
Then read it first. Listening to it, Matthias.
Oh yeah, sorry. So the question is, I don't use DFW, but I can only activate it over altogether in NSX Team Manager. So splitting clusters would mean a second NSX manager, or could I deactivate DFW for single clusters? So we need to reformulate that a bit. What you're talking about is if you navigate in NSX to security DFW and then change the settings subtab, there is a slider which allows you to deactivate the DFW. From a licensing perspective, from a running perspective, don't think they need to deactivate it.
No, because the funny thing is, it is only possible in the other direction, because at the moment you can enable the distributed firewall without using networking. So just enable security only, which is basically the distributed firewall solution, then also working on a traditional distributed virtual switch. Or assume if you prepare a full cluster, you have networking and security always in the combination, which brings us to the point. So at the moment, technically, there is no difference. And coming back to the question, is there is no feature to deactivate because it is not there as we are talking about NSX 4.1.2.1. Hopefully, new version number is coming up as soon as possible. But technically, as soon if you enable a cluster for NSX, currently you always enable firewalling and networking, but you don't utilize it at the end. So you just need to enable anything because it is there by good.
But if you're not adding any rules, it should not be counted.
Counted, yeah.
Yeah. And for Cloud Director, if we not talk against CSP, you really need to activate the DFW from a tenant perspective. So you need to create the data center group, increase the scope of the Edge Gateway and the OBDC networks. And once you have the data center groups with the increased scope, then you have a field in Cloud Director enabling to click activate DFW. And as soon as you click that configuration, Cloud Director creates a new section within the NSX DFW firewall rule set, and then it's counted.
Yep.
Or if you build a few rules. So if you do like, I do managed service, it's DFW. It doesn't matter who uses it.
No. Please don't do this.
It's an option.
Yeah.
I didn't say it's a good option, but it's an option. Any other questions?
It's like we have a pretty silent group today.
Yeah. So we need to be precisely off with the DFW and how does it count or maybe not, or yes or maybe. That's our opinion. Just to be very clear on that statement.
It is our opinion. It is subject to change. And as always, the latest product usage guide in combination with whatever you have as a contract with Broadcom is going to apply. If you are a white label host, you should actually you have basically three contracts to check. One is your click-through agreement, which you have as a registered partner. One is the contract you have with your up-level host. And one is the product usage guide. I would at least expect that you have all three of them. So if you miss any one of them, talk to whoever your host is, because they should provide you with clear guidance from a contract perspective. Otherwise, it's up to you. Good. But we covered already 30 minutes, so that is, I think, a good length for the podcast in the first place.
Just one last add-on, because as we have talked about metering and also do the cost calculation for your customers, there is an episode available where we had our Ella as a guest, where we had talked about all of the stuff. So if you are interested in this stuff, go back to one
episode. I think it was 23 or 24.
It is 25. It was the last one. We finally. So there is always the live version, which is immediately available, which is the one like what we are currently doing. And typically 1 or 2 weeks later, depending on how long it takes us to get all the transcript and everything done, is when we put the recording version, including transcript and everything online. And that actually was done, I think, yesterday or something, or today or somewhere. Yeah. But that's episode 25. And that's... Will there be a minimum XMPP version to use with the new license keys? We all hope no.
I think it's very easy. If you go to the supported product versions, you know which ones to use.
Yes and no, Matthias, because it's there are exceptions in the for service providers if they have a running infrastructure.
Yeah.
But so then it's, what's really interesting is if you currently have a look to different portals, their NSX license keys are gone. Dot. So let's see what's coming up in the next couple of days, hours, weeks, whatever.
So yeah, we should not start a rumor Broadcom sold NSX to Microsoft.
All Matthias, don't do that. All license portals should be back up online again, I think by May 6th or something like that. That has been
something like that.
May 5th or May 6th, yeah.
So, but the good warning message which came out a few days ago is that for the service providers, because they all get new license keys and they must destroy the old ones anyway, there is not necessarily any good reason for doing so anymore. But for any enterprise commercial customers, it might be a good idea to pull a complete export of all the license keys out of the portal now, because it's going to go into, I think, read-only mode in a week or two. And by the point in time it goes into read-only mode, I'm not sure if you can generate reports anymore, or if at that stage you would need to manually pick each individual license key.
But I think Broadcom already sent a few emails asking for, please export your data.
Your data, yeah.
Yes, because it really will not be accessible anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like
the systems.
Terms is like, yeah, we just thought we are turning it off. We are going to not turn it off. If Broadcom says it's going to be turned off, it's going to be turned off. We have seen that already for other systems. It's like that
will
is
it be for the 22nd or the 24th. Something around that.
Like look into the customer portal. I currently can't do that in parallel. Because I'm in a different Broadcom system in parallel, because that would confuse things again. But better check your systems and better check your portals and things like that. And at least I think that gives us the hope that for a few couple of weeks or months, we can potentially use the license portal without going into private or incognito mode every time.
Yeah. So the Customer Connect will go into read-only, fully read-only at Thursday of April, and we'll be back at Monday the 6th May. But to be honest, we are talking about really the whole Customer Connect. The licensing sites will be offline. I think it was 1 week earlier.
Yeah, so there are individual deadlines for that. But it says it's like you should also potentially, as a customer, write down the emergency support number, because if something goes wrong in all these transitions and you can't actually file support tickets online anymore, it might be quite handy to have the new support phone number, because I think that's a new one. That's not the old VMware number which they published there.
Yes.
Good. That being said, I think that was a good warning at the end. Toby, there was a security warning you wanted to raise at the beginning of the show. I just actually went through my notes again.
What?
Wasn't there a security thing you wanted to actually put into today's session?
Yes. Sure. This was we was talking yesterday. So Cloud Director 10.5.1.1 is there since mid of March. No, end of March. And so for those service providers who are currently running on 10.5.1, please update your VCD, because there is a security issue in 10.5.1. So please patch your Cloud Director to 10.5.1.1. Thank you for that.
So that's what I would call famous last word.
Good. That being said, I think we are due to do another recording where we have the partner week in 3 weeks.
3 weeks, yes.
2 weeks. 3 weeks? 2 weeks? Two and a half?
Two and a half.
Let's do two and a half.
I'm going to be here in Middle East for 2.5 more weeks, so it's going to be the week after.
The first couple of days of May will be the next episode.
Because everything else is going to be a bit more complicated.
Yeah, talking about the 2nd of May, we will have the next episode.
And we will let everybody know what's going to be the topic for that session. In the meantime, if you have any questions, as always, feel free to drop us a note, drop us a question, and then we can make sure that we add that to our topic list for one of the next sessions. We will still publish a lot of other news in the next couple of days over social media around the Cloud Director license changes and a few other things which haven't been mentioned yet, but we wanted to get this podcast back into more of a technical round. In parallel, also a reminder, because in approximately 20 minutes time, Toby and I are going to go back online with the VCF Musketeers. So we are going to continue our journey through the configuration things. Toby and Patrick are live on at least weekly basis with
their weekly base currently, also talking about multiple stuff. Yesterday we had a SD-WAN session, so let's see.
So there are multiple different ways on also how to attend any of our live sessions and actually jump in there and ask us any questions over there. Feel free to do that at any point in time. We are always happy to have attendees joining us. And with that being said, thank you all for watching and thank you all for listening to the podcast. Hear you soon.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.